Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Dr. Jason D. Hill of DePaul University. He is professor of philosophy there, a very accomplished author, numerous books on subjects ranging from philosophy to civil disobedience to the current state of America, as he has characterized it in his forthcoming book, which is entitled, We Have Overcome, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. Professor, one of the things that is a symptom for many of us of serious mischief being made on college campuses these days, you talked about, you know, more conservative professors. I gather that you're something of an anomaly in the professoriate in your own campus as well as elsewhere. But it's even the case that conservative speakers, visitors, are having a hard time getting on campuses across the United States. Would you talk a little bit about your perceptions of the importance of freedom of speech, both in academia and more broadly, to sort of this kind of recalibration that we need to have, as well as, well, frankly, for that matter, the future of our polity?
Yes, I think this is becoming increasingly worse. And again, the irony is that the left in the 1960s was the vanguard of free speech, big proponent of free speech. Today, they're the enemies of free speech, and it's the right, it's the conservatives who are struggling against great odds to preserve free speech. I mean, I've witnessed so many conservative thinkers like Christina Hoff Sommers, Charles Murray, to name a few, who have been bullied. They were talking about respectable speakers, even someone like Condoleezza Rice, whose invitations have had to be retracted because she's seen as a hate speaker or an advocate of hate speech. I think there's something that's terrifying that's taking place where people are assuming their own infallibility on certain positions, and also where people are, in some sense, taking it as a form of offense when perceived social injustices have to be explained. That is, they just assume that certain things are offensive against certain groups, and that if you question what is the nature of the offense, what is the how there might be different interpretations about a certain offense, offense is taken against that. People just assume a kind of infallibility about their positions. And going back to John Stuart Mill, I think this is very, very dangerous, because part of how we correct our mistakes is by putting forth our viewpoints and our arguments in the public sphere, having other people issue rejoinders and contestations. And in a Socratic fashion, we counter, and we have a philosophical give and take, and we leave thinking, well, my reasoning and my premises that I started out with might have been flawed, or they might have not have been nuanced as I thought. This is not what's taking place. What we're seeing really is the cult of victimology on our college campuses, which is a lust for power. It's the politicization of one's identity through and through. And this is not an issue of people just offending one's sensibilities and one's tastes. This is a matter of people who are socially irrelevant, most of them to begin with, in the humanities and the social sciences, contribute nothing to this great country, very little, if anything, in terms of real thinking and real life fit between ideas and reality. And so the only way that they can get some sort of attention is by falling back onto an identity of being a victim.
Professor, this is a profoundly frightening thought, but let me just put it to you anyway. When it becomes the case that Americans are unable to exercise their freedom of speech, lest they give offense to somebody, then it really does seem as though, in short order, you're going to have this veto effectively exercised on essentially any kind of speech. And the only thing that will be acceptable is presumably the canon, if you want to call it that, the pedagogy and the universities, the doctrines that are held to be those of the victims, you know, and in turn they will become the oppressors. Is that too much of a stretch based on what we're seeing happening in our own country, let alone in Europe or in other parts of the world?
Well, I think it's, having been in the academy for over 22 years now, I think it's actually even maybe far worse. This is not hyperbole. I think we're seeing certain parallels between what took place, let's say, in the Weimar Republic and before the rise of Nazism and in other fascist countries, where the intellectuals, rather than being, you know, the vanguards for free thought, began codifying certain forms of received wisdom into knowledge templates that were then treated as unassailable truths that couldn't be. This is the beginning of fascism. And I think it's only a really strong form of moral insurrectionism on the part of, let's say, dissenting conservative liberals such as myself, conservatives in general, who don't cede. I think what's taking place is that there's a lot of concession that's being made to the radical academic left in the academy. People out of guilt, or people because they themselves are always questioning the truth, the standpoints of truth from which they're operating, or their own assumptions. Everything is being radically called into question. Well, sometimes one's convictions and one's principles, one has to sometimes treat some of those paradoxically when one is fighting the adversary as unassailable truths: the commitment to free speech, the commitment to individualism, the commitment to capitalism, the commitment to liberty. These are what give America her identity and all these things. And I think that too many people who are secret dissenters privately question their commitment to their own values. And so the academic left has a moral monopoly on the discourse, unfortunately.
Yeah, has their way with them. I think there's also, at some level, fear operating too. Let's face it, the character assassination and the marginalizing and the threats of violence. Even you mentioned Professor Murray, for example, who was actually subjected to that on the Middlebury campus. Professor, let me turn before the break, but we'll get into it more on the other side, to something you've touched on several times, and that seems to be both exploiting and, to some extent, weaponizing the practices that you've talked about. You've mostly associated them with the radical left, the multicultural left, but the folks that Andy McCarthy describes as Sharia supremacists, I think it's an apt phrase, are also much given to claiming to be offended and insisting on their critics or even, you know, objective analysts being silenced because they are, you know, speaking the truth, but it's an unwelcome truth. Let me ask you about your perspective, perhaps maybe quickly, on campus. Are you seeing this operate with the Muslim Brotherhood's Muslim Students Association, for example, on college campuses today?
Absolutely. And I'm fortunate to be able to be invited and give talks on several campuses. So I'm quite familiar with not just my university, but with many, both European also, and because I lecture a great deal in Europe, and American universities. I think this is right. I think that there are two things to think about. One is these individuals will glom on to any ideology that can undermine and bring down the West. And right now, Muslim people and Islamic people are seen as victims. And I think their agency, is many of them, is being expropriated by people on the radical left for their own nefarious schemes, which is to really destroy America and destroy Western civilization.
It's a bit of a symbiotic relationship. I think there's mutual exploitation here. The red-green axis, I think we've called it. Let me just say, Professor, we have to pause, and we'll be right back with more on this question of what the Sharia supremacists are doing with the left, with the author of Civil Disobedience and the Politics of Identity, When We Should Not Get Along, Professor Jason Hill, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.